This week on your Old School RuneScape update, Varlamor opens its borders and pockets, providing content for everyone. Much glory can be gained in the Fortis Coliseum, while the Moon's Apparel shine their light on aspiring PVMers. Rumor has it that Hunter and Thieving also got updated. This is the Old School RuneScape Update, Episode 20, recorded Saturday, March 23rd, 2024. Multifaceted Varlamor. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Old School RuneScape Update, Varlamor Week, one of the biggest weeks in Old School RuneScape this year, probably. Definitely the biggest for the podcast so far. Sirion, you're here as you are each and every week.
Mm-hmm.
Fun times?
Yeah, absolutely.
I agree. Me too. And to share those fun times and to spread the joy around the podcast, we have a guest joining us on the podcast. Everybody say hello to Arcane. Welcome.
Hello.
Glad to be here.
You've been around all things RSB&B for many years. So just give the listeners a brief introduction of who you are and how you came to Old School RuneScape, I guess.
Sure. I guess I could be considered a legacy member of RSB&B, if that's even a term yet. It's probably been since, we were saying before the show, about 2006 is when I joined. Started playing RuneScape late 2004. As most of us were at the time, incredibly obsessed. What's the first thing that I do is I'm looking for podcasts and stuff. It's like, RuneScape podcast. Stumbled upon a bunch, landed on RSB&B, and here we are, I guess, 18 years later, still part of the community, still playing RuneScape. Like I said, started playing RuneScape 2004, kind of been playing ever since. My 20th year anniversary is coming up later this year.
Ooh.
My couple claim to fames are my first 99 in RS2 was smithing, followed by runecrafting, and then construction. So very unconventional.
Before runespan,
correct. That was in 2009. I got all three of those 99s, I believe. Wasn't the most efficient player. But, I grinded it out and stuck with it and ended up maxing in 2015, which at that point it was considered RS3 after EOC. I got my completionist cape in 2016, and then I finally trimmed in 2019 and have maintained that ever since, recently getting my master quest cape. I believe it was in 22 when they made that part of trim. When Old School came out, I was obviously interested, heavily invested, obviously, in RS3 since I was pretty close to maxing already and I didn't like the idea of basically starting over, but just kind of played here and there, and then finally kind of buckled down and got my quest cape on Old School following the optimal quest guide, and I actually got that a day before this most recent leagues. So got my quest cape there, did play the most recent leagues, Leagues 4. Got Dragon Trophy, really enjoyed that whole experience, and just kind of stuck with old school ever since it ended, I guess. After I got Necromancy to 120 and kind of recomped and retrimmed, just kind of wanted something different, and that's when I shifted to finishing getting up my quest cape, and just kind of stuck with old school. I've told Shane I'm kind of in maintenance mode in RS3, just kind of doing dailies here and there and, playing during double XP and stuff like that, making sure all my capes are kept up, but definitely pouring a lot more of my game time into old school. So that's kind of a background on me and my I guess, current goal and aspiration in old school is to get untrimmed runecrafting this time and see how long I can keep
it. I was going to wonder if you were going to be doing that.
Yes, I will be going for untrimmed runecrafting, and I want to see how long I could keep it. Ideally, I'd like to be maxed with untrimmed runecrafting with the telegrab method, so we'll see how I can keep that up. So that'll be my, hopefully, my little claim to fame there. So,
and what made you try out old school? What made you gravitate towards old school RuneScape eventually?
I just... And I know it can get kind of touchy, but I don't know. The state of RS3, it's a good game.
Did it start with an H?
Yes. it was just, again, I can't bash it too much. I have over a year of playtime in RS3, and I'll never quit, but it was just, I think it was kind of the nail in the coffin for me. Necromancy was good, not as good as it could have been. It just felt a little hollow. And then, the drama with, what happened. And that was just kind of, I think that was the turning point for a lot of people. And I'm very, very glad that they overturned it and whatnot. But, in the 2 to 3 months that I really focused on getting my quest cape and then playing leagues, it was really apparent just the focus that was on old school rather than RS3, just in terms of update quality. And, that's nothing against any of the developers. They have their hands tied too. It's unfortunate, but it's just kind of the way I think I gravitated, and here we are. So
yeah, and you mentioned update quality and whatnot, and in general, the updates that are produced for old school do feel thoroughly RuneScape-y on that. And I think we're definitely seeing that with Varlamore too this week. And I also just do want to say that folks who are listening to the podcast, Arcane here was actually the one who produced the music track for the podcast, both the intro and the closeout music. Many people don't know that, yeah. But that's something you did. I forget when you did the first one, but you also did a remaster of them in 2018, which is what you're currently hearing. So we really enjoy those. But full show notes for this week, update.show/OS. We also have the friends chat in-game at Bits Bytes, and we have a community Discord too, update.show/Discord. If you want to join there, poke any of us, talk about anything you heard on the show, we're more than happy to have you. So what were you thinking when you saw Varlamore, and how has it been for you this first week? Because it's a big update.
It is. I think with everyone, there was a lot of hype. I mean, I don't want this whole show just to be a comparison to RS3 and old school, but I mean, it's big, right? I think when Zaya released, it was obviously huge. And that was right around, old school is supposed to be kind of a legacy server and just kind of a copy. And I think when Zaya released, that was kind of where it started to diverge and it really became a different game. So big area expansions are always big, no matter what the game is, right? When we had Menaphos, that was big. But no, I think there was a lot of hype, and it had a lot of promise. There was a bunch of new stuff, and the way they've added just the different new skilling methods, they seem organic. It doesn't just feel like they grab something and just stuck it in the middle of an island and here you go. It flows, and I really like that.
And it's also natural.
Like the amazing thing about Varlamore is that it feels, I guess, fresh, but not like something completely like it also feels in line with everything we already have in the game, right? Like the thieving is just it takes existing mechanics and adds like a few like different touches to it. But it's still all the same as what we have.
You compared it to archaeology. I know
we'll
get
to that later.
Okay,
we'll get to that later.
Yeah, because that would be its own path. And I think one of the things, looking at the rundown for what they provided with the Varlamore News Post, the first thing I saw with this very PVM centric, right? And I feel like a lot of people, and this is where I want to really highlight the reason why I came to you, Dave, on the show, is because I knew you were, going to be messing around with the Colosseum and whatnot this week. And I have to be honest, is that the Colosseum is at least a number of orders of magnitude above from where I am in terms of my PVM capability. I tried wave one like 3 times and I could get maybe 1 or 2 of the NPCs in there down, but it is still presently beyond me. So how are you feeling with the Colosseum and whatnot this week, and, you know, Colosseum in general as a piece of content, I guess.
Sure. I think I share the same opinion with a lot of people in the fact that I don't think any of us realized it was going to be this hard. I think a lot of the sentiment around the community in terms of just streamers and YouTubers as well was, you know, they weren't expecting it to be sort of Inferno difficulty, because just kind of digging deeper, you would have thought that Jagex would have marketed it as such. I think we all kind of thought that it would ramp up. It would almost be kind of ongoing content. I think at one point there was speculation that it would just, the waves would kind of go on forever. So, you know, that would, you know, beg the point that maybe it might be like a Fight Caves type thing and just kind of keep going until you can't.
Yeah. Like my thought was Fight Caves meets Dominion Tower.
Correct. Yes. And that's kind of what I had thought. And it was just going to be, how far can you go? And your personal best would be, oh, I got to, you know, wave 117, and then, you know, you keep pushing rather than, oh, you go to wave 12 and it just kind of drops off. That being said, I think, like I said, I think a lot of people didn't realize it would be this hard. And I think it's good. Not my personal favorite in terms of wave content and just super intense PVM. I've definitely given it a shot. I got to wave 4. I think that's a fairly valiant effort for being 90 combat with a quest cape. Obviously, you don't have best in slot anything. I don't have a scythe. I don't have a rapier. Ancients.
I forgot that you're around 90 combat, and and, you know, that's as far as you went. I think that's a fairly good kick at the can. I don't know, Sirion, did you give it a try? What do you?
No. After you said I couldn't get past wave 1, I was like, you know what? I'm not going to waste my resources on that.
It's interesting though, and you know, I take it with a grain of salt with my initial impression of it, because I personally, I don't have a fire cave. I have not done fight caves in old school. I have not done Inferno, but just from observing other players play and, you know, myself giving it a go, it seems very much like a safe spotting puzzle is the way I like to word it. Obviously there's PVM, there's prayer flicking, there's gear switching. But your runs, other than having your debuffs and your modifiers, pretty heavily relies on how you're able to kind of manipulate the how they stack up against each other, and just, you know, taking them one by one. You know, if the big javelin thrower guys are coming up on your side, you need to run to the opposite pillar to try to get them to, you know, get baited to the other diagonal type thing. It really feels like a puzzle, and I think that's cool. It's not bad.
And that's one of the many facets of OS PVM. Is that, you know, when you break it down, and we'll talk more about this in the Perilous Moons section, Perilous Moons is movement, Scurrius is prayer switching in terms of teaching, and this is an entirely different facet, as you said, where it's kind of like, I guess you said, manipulating the battlefield on that. And I never really thought of old school combat in that way until I started doing some of the combat stuff in leagues myself. I always thought it's just going to be a game of, you know, managing the inventory, managing the UI and such. And then I think over time you start to gain a bit of an appreciation as to why people like this in terms of old school PVM. I don't know where you fall down on old school PVM and how much of that you wound up doing in leagues, because you were pretty much the meta choice in terms of your regions, if I remember correctly there, right? So you had lots of raids to do.
Yeah, pretty close. And I think my philosophy for leagues was, you know, I just got my quest cape. I had not done any raids content. I did the entry mode Theater of Blood solo. So that was really the only sort of experience I had with raids. And I think I tried to do the mini quest for TOA, but obviously kind of hit a brick wall at the end boss. So yeah, for leagues, I kind of took that as an opportunity to, you know, pick the raid regions, and not that I regretted it, but, you know, even having all those overpowered buffs and modifiers, if you haven't tried it and if you're not at that point in PVM, it doesn't do too much for you. I mean, it helps, right? But yeah. it doesn't walk you through it. You still need to be able to do your prayers and stuff. You know, sure, I had unlimited, you know, food with banknote, but at the same time, if you're not, you know, you're not sidestepping this properly and stuff, you're still going to get smacked. So
and that's why I brought that up, because I feel like it was maybe a bit of a preview of what you're going to see in the Colosseum, whereas somebody who is, you know, level 126 with all the top gear is going to have a pretty good idea of what they're going to be walking into like that. But, you know, it was even hours after the update dropped that the first world first broadcasts were made in relation to people completing the Colosseum on that. So,
yeah.
So you mentioned that like the Colosseum was harder than sort of communicated. Do you think that is a problem, or is it sort of, did they like, if you take aside the communication issue, like, is it at the right difficulty level, or did they overtune it?
I think it's good. I think it does very well for even just the hype of the update. You know, when a lot of games get major content updates, major patches, you know, you have kind of the world first race, right? The first to get in it. I feel like if it was what we thought it was going to be, that it would already be dead content, but it was just, all right, yep, I kind of went and did my thing and now I'm done, you know. So I think it's good. Like I said, it's not necessarily my cup of tea, not what I enjoy doing. It's a nice challenge. But I think it's really great for the community kind of as a whole. You have a very mid-level update, which is great, but you also have kind of that top tier proving ground, so to speak, that kind of challenges the players that are already kind of max, but it gives the mid-level players something to aspire to. So
yeah, and you know, I really want to hone in on that. It's that I agree with you that it really wasn't made clear that it was going to be such a huge challenge climber like that. And I don't think there's a problem with that, because that's how you know, create hype and anticipation around your top end meta players, which you absolutely need to do. And I think the interesting thing about all of this is that, well, there's really something for everybody in this update then. From the quest, from the skilling, to the introductory PVM, to this at the top end of it, it was just a little bit odd seeing that. Oh well, I mean, we weren't necessarily ramping up for this kind of challenge climber on day one, but it's here, and I think people are having a lot of fun with it. And the circles I'm a part of, and you know, even leaning into cross game stuff, people are very excited to be seeing this. So,
and I think it was done very, very, very well in terms of difficulty versus reward. I think I and a lot of people would have more of a problem with it if it was this hard and the rewards were basically you have to do this if you want to be relevant, right? Not to downplay the quiver, but it's a quiver, like you still have plenty of great options for that. But if it was like a full armor set or something that like you need this to be it, right? It's one piece of gear. It's very nice, but it's not like the end all be all. Like now you have to dedicate the next 4 weeks of your life to try to down this if you want to like be efficient at Slayer, right? So I think that was done very well. You know, not necessarily optional, but not mandatory either.
Yeah.
So on the opposite side though, like, is it going to be something that people will want to come back to after completing it once, or is it going to be a very much a one-off thing?
That's a good point, and I think it would be worth revisiting if they haven't thought about it already, but we could very well see, you know, an update with batch 2, or if there's going to even be a batch 3, you know, they could bring something else in and maybe give us that sort of quote unquote endless mode like we would have in Dominion Tower that we were kind of thought that it was going to be. I think a lot of people that are critical of this update often forget that this, you know, this is batch 1. This is kind of the groundwork. Things could be layered on to existing stuff that was in batch 1. But this, you know, this isn't necessarily the final product. There could be plenty of stuff that's added later. And they even said, you know, they're gonna keep an eye on tuning and keep an eye on drops and stuff, and, you know, not, you know, start tuning stuff and updating numbers in the first 3 days after release. They're going to look at it and do what makes sense. So we could very well see plenty of updates to the Colosseum to keep it relevant. So
are you interested in any of the rewards?
They look very interesting. I like the, I believe it's the range weapon that kind of, it's more like a boomerang almost. I think that's very cool, unless, I think that's Colosseum. That's not Moons.
Yeah, that's
but
Colosseum.
Yeah, it's obviously definitely interested in the rewards, but again, it's not something to where I feel obligated, like I have to absolutely drop everything and try to get this down, at least in my current kind of scope, you know, mid-level. It's not necessarily required for mid-level. If you want to do it mid-level, like that's awesome, and you're cream of the crop, but not necessarily something that needs to be done.
Shane, when are you going to get all the glory to get the herb patch, disease protection?
I saw that. You know, that was the first thing I did with the update, was that I was mapping out the best way to get to that herb patch.
Yeah.
But I agree, and I'm glad that most of the items that come out of the Fortis Colosseum are not going to, you know, be hugely impactful from the meta. Knock on wood, the last time I said that on a podcast, we were wrong on that. But I mean, when it comes to the Sunfire Arbor and whatnot, 60 prayer, 40 defense requirements on that, I mean, there's better things out there for that, but it's an interesting set nonetheless. On that, as well as, you know, like you said, Dave, or Arcane, his real name is Dave. So sorry if I sometimes call him Dave, but that's going to be how it is on this podcast. The quiver, like you said, is very horizontal and whatnot in terms of rewards. It's not something that just goes straight up with that. So, but we know how difficult the Colosseum is, to the point where I couldn't even get past the first wave, and you were getting to wave four and such. There is another update that came within Varlamor, and that's Perilous Moons, which
one that even I can do.
Yeah, okay, let's talk about this here. It's a PVM learning experience, much like Scurrius was. And I very briefly mentioned that Scurrius was prayers. This is all about movement. Dave, how was this on your first go? Did you get all three on your first run through?
I got the blue and the yellow down. Had a little bit of trouble with red, but I think looking back, it was kind of part of a bug, and then everybody just kind of running around and being confused. But no, I really enjoyed it, and I love this sort of content. I specifically like the fact that you can basically be self-sufficient. You don't have to bring supplies. You can make everything in there, and that's super cool. So, you know, people, barrier to entry for PVM, especially Iron Men, you know, they have to sit there and they got to farm herbs for weeks and, you know, get their Cerebrews, get their super combats, do all this stuff. You can just pick a bush, use your pestle and mortar, and you have two super combats and you're good to go. And that'll last you 3-4 runs probably. I really like that. So I had a really good time, just doing the quest and getting the first clear. And I think, overall that's a wonderful piece of content.
Yeah. And I also have to say, in terms of just kind of pushing the envelope on things, is that it looks like it's a group boss when you observe before you click into the individual arenas, but you're fighting your own boss there with your own HP bar, but you see everybody else in there. And I don't think they've done that anywhere in any of the PVM instances before. So that was very interesting to me, because I went in blind. I was doing it as part of the quest, and I thought there was going to be a group, but then I realized, oh, I'm working on my own 500 hit points bar. This is going to be interesting.
I think that's go ahead.
It's great though, isn't it? Right? Like I had so much fun with it, because you're just doing it yourself. You can just look what other people are doing to sort of learn the boss in a very natural way. And it, I don't know. I find some of the content, when it's very Like, the instance bosses, like, it makes sense because it's not competitive, but, like, you lose all the multiplayer aspect of it. And this, to me, tracks that balance perfectly. I don't know. There was a bunch of, like, you can just chat with people during the fight, right? Like, people were helping each other and giving tips or just laughing at...
Really?
You know, how hard. Yeah.
My world was as quiet as a pin.
I think it really it brings life to a piece of content indefinitely, right? So I mean, even if it was a group encounter, you know, say in, I don't know, 2 weeks, it could be empty, and like that would, it's always just, you're always going to see everybody in there, like a Barrows sort of thing. Everybody has their own, but you know, other than bringing sort of life to a piece of content, I think it helps their server load. So even on the back end, it makes more sense.
Yeah, and I mean, this got the bigger rewards too. We're not necessarily going there yet, but I feel like this got the bigger rewards compared to the Colosseum. And a bit of background information on how the sausage was made on this episode. When I was putting the initial run of the show notes together, I had put Perilous Moons first because of that, but Sirion had the idea of feeding the Colosseum into that. And I mean, either works on that, but that was just a preview of my internal thought. Bigger rewards, learning experience, let's put this first. But it worked either way on this. How many tries did it take you guys to get blood done?
I got mine on my second attempt.
All right.
I think I took 4 or 5 to get that one done. I struggled with it a lot.
Yeah.
Largely because of the healing. I couldn't, like, I got pretty unlucky, I think, on a few kills with, like, bad healing. It's something they're going to address, I saw in the feedback post, and I think that's good. I think it's a little bit too punishing, a little bit too random.
Yeah. Because I got to the point where people thought that you shouldn't, that you could only eat when the Blood Moon boss was not doing a special.
Yeah, I think the full mechanics are not fully known yet. I think the boss heals. It's said that the boss heals in part if you eat food on one of the circles. I don't know if that's true. I don't know if it's been confirmed, but I mean, I in hindsight, right, looking at it, I think it's a really cool idea that the way the boss works is like it does 3 hits in a row, right? And the moment one of the hits fills the accuracy check against you, subsequent hits will also fill. And the hits sort of increment. Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And so the hits are like 1, 5, and 20, right? So it skills up a lot. So the better your defense, right? Like this is the kind of boss where you might want to consider bringing a shield over a defender.
Yeah.
And also the boss heals, like the blood boss, for example, heals like 1 times, then 3 times, and then 5 times on the subsequent hit. So if you get unlucky on your accuracy roll, like the boss might heal more than 100 hit points in a single hit. I've had that happen to me like 2 hits in a row, and now all of a sudden the boss has half health.
Right. Okay.
And I think that got me pretty frustrated. Now, the other bosses, like the Eclipse and the Blue Moon, they have the same issue. And they also have sort of an effect on you. Like, I think one of them drains, you know, your attack, max attack or something, and the other does something else. Like, they all have effects, but they don't impact you as much as V-Healing. So I think it's just a tuning issue.
Yeah.
But I think the moment people learn these mechanics and learn that they need to optimize, like I was wearing an obsidian plate, which is really bad because it has
doesn't
really
have
bad
to,
defense.
Because that provides you a bit of a strength bonus.
Yeah, exactly. So like I was better off wearing a dragon plate body, and I think, you know, using defense potions and maybe even upgrading to Barrows.
Yep. Yeah.
It's going to make that boss so much easier.
Did you guys lean into the weaknesses of slash, stab, and crush for each of them?
I didn't in the end because the blood boss had slash and I have slash weapon anyway. I think the other two were
Eclipse was stab and Blue was crush.
I mean, they were free, essentially, I felt. I don't know how you two have experienced that, but especially after I did the Bloodbond second and I did the Eclipse one last, and the Eclipse one I ate like one piece of food and it felt like a completely free kill.
Yeah, and you know, Eclipse in Blue I did on the first run entirely, but you know, I wanted to get it done easily, so I did lead into that. I used the Dragon Dagger poisoned and the Dragon Mace for my Stab and Crush, and the Whip for Slash, which was a new purchase for me on this for the Blood One. And of course the Blood One was the one that caused the issues on that. And you know, when you look at it, it's kind of like a dance, isn't it, in that you're moving around trying to follow the lights on the floor. And with that, do you feel like you could do a boss, either of you, after this, that relies on movement mechanics like that?
Yeah, I think so. I think I had mentioned this before, but I really like sort of the mechanics they introduced with this. Blood specifically, the Jaguar phase, that is that sort of technique or mechanic.
Flinching.
Is... Yes, and that is the mechanic that is used on the last boss of Theater of Blood, almost to a T. The other part, the other special attack that Blood has, just kind of the rain down, that is a mechanic in the final boss fight of Sins of the Father, as well as the final phase of the last boss of TOA. So it really sort of leans into that Scurious, you know, teaching you prayer flicking, where Perilous Moons has a lot of mechanics that are not dumbed down, but a less punishing version of endgame raid content. The Blue Moon, the twisters, and the breaking the ice kind of resembles a puzzle room in TOA. And then the Eclipse, the orb that goes around the room is similar to the Zuck fight in the Inferno at the end. In terms of kind of staying in line with it and blocking the range. But the other mechanic in Eclipse is really cool because it's really nowhere else. And I think everybody loves that mechanic. I've heard so many people saying it's so cool. It's intuitive. Yeah. It's new. It gives you an opportunity to kind of parry. And it's fun. So I think they knocked it out of the park.
Are you talking about the one where you just click on where the boss teleports to? Or?
Yeah. Yes. As long as you're facing him, you kind of get a little retaliation. Yep.
It works so well. Once you have the timing down, like you just click immediately when it spawns. And then once you get the timing down, it's pretty, like, it's not bug. Like I was afraid it would be glitchy, right? Like it wouldn't detect. And it's like, for me, the moment I figured out the timing, I got like 100% success rate. Perfect. Like the fact that they made that possible in this tick-based game,
yes,
blew my mind.
That's big. And another, not really a side note, I guess it is a side note, that really helped me, and I had this problem in RS2 and RS3 with just the whole tick-based game and PVM and movement. Obviously, there, at any given time, there could be, you know, 0.6 second delay, right?
Yeah.
Well, with old school, the Runelite plugin to show your true tile has really helped me because.
Yeah. I thought of enabling. Okay.
What really helped me visualize it is you click. So say a twister is coming towards you and you click three tiles away. It registers your movement almost instantaneously. And it's usually, if you're running, it's like two tiles ahead of you. So that's where it is, not where your character is. So it's a little misleading. So when you turn that on and you're moving and you get hit, normally you would, you know, say get hit by a cyclone. You'd be like, oh my gosh, I'm going to take damage. But if you don't and you have true tile on, you'll notice your true tile where the game registers where you're at is two ahead of you. And that really kind of helps you time your movement.
Yeah.
And
that's
helped me tremendously.
And I noticed people were moving directly before the icon on the floor would move. So that's what was happening there. Okay.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So the game is more responsive than you think. It just doesn't show you that kind of immediately. Yeah. So, and then same with...
I found it incredibly useful for the orb as well to know my true tile, to make sure it's like on one of the right tiles where I can avoid the attack. So then you just switch to walk, and if you just keep walking, you keep up with it perfectly. So... Yes.
You know what you guys are teaching me here is that I've been thinking about old school PVM wrong the entire time.
How so?
Well, I've been thinking about it as the primary hindrance being the fact, okay, I can't break a stun. Okay, I'm going to be inhibited by, you know, the tick system, as Arcane here mentioned. I'm going to be trying to, in effect, telegraph where movement is going, but in reality, what it's all about at the end of the day is sometimes it's an environmental-based fight. Sometimes it's going to be something on prayer flicking, which, you know, you can set up a keybind on your mouse to switch to your prayer menu and then just click the button after that. So that kind of mitigates that. But instead of it being a case of needing to press the right buttons at the right time and do a rotation or activate certain powers, it's going to be about, do you know what the boss is going to do, and can you get out of the way, or can you find a way to mitigate that? And mm-hmm. And the sense I'm getting based on what you said about how this has parallels to all sorts of different, like you said, the Sins of the Father quest boss and two of the raids out there, that's really interesting when you look at it from this perspective and why they want to get people into this with something like Moons. So,
I mean, when Scurrius was released as learning boss, right, as teaching boss, and I played it, I was like, if this is what PVM is like, I'm not going to like it. And that's because it has a lot of to do with like all the prayer flicking, and I find the UI too clunky. Like, over the past 2 days, I've done a few Scurrius kills, and like, I just don't have
for like an AB comparison.
Well, yeah, sure, though also it just happened to work out that way. Slayer, you know. But, like, I don't have the accuracy to hit the right prayer, right? Like, sometimes I misclick or, like, mess up. And, like, there's a lot of clunkiness switching between, like, all the different interfaces. I feel I need to bite the UI a lot more than the game. Whereas Perilous Moon, it all feels way more intuitive. Like, you're only really dealing with the point and click aspect of the game.
Yeah.
And that to me is much more enjoyable.
Right. And that's why, going back to Leagues, I particularly enjoyed Gauntlet and Zulra. So
I think they're doing it right in terms, you know, you have Scurrius that focuses on prayers, and Moons where, you know, overheads really don't do anything at all. So you really don't need to do prayers. Now, you can, I believe, obviously, you know, Piety and Steel Skin and stuff like that, if you want to just kind of optionally just optimize and get familiar with sort of prayer flicking in that respect, you're more than welcome to, but obviously not needed. But, you know, just kind of segregating each sort of aspect of combat. You have your movement, and then Scurrius, you have your prayers, and then, like, you know, once you get comfortable with that, you can start kind of getting into the next phase of that. And I think Desert Treasure 2 really kind of brings both of those two together. Now that I'm looking back, those bosses kind of implement both of those. Yeah. So I think that works really well.
Yeah, I really struggled during Leagues. I tried the Gauntlet, so Hunlef. And I really struggled because you have to mix both switching between two prayers and moving around, right? Yeah. And I kind of feel like if I do more Perilous Moons, and like I've done a bit of Scurrius, and I'm actually getting better at prayer flicking. Like, I hate to admit it, but now that I've done like 15 kills or so, I'm starting to get the hang of like, when do I need to turn it on, and I can actually start preserving my prayer a little bit as well. And I feel if I spend a little bit more time there and spend a little bit of time of Perilous Moons, I wouldn't have that much trouble doing the Gauntlet, because it's just the same thing, but, you know, amped up a little bit, where if you mess up, it's a little bit more punishing.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Good. The fact that they made this like an educational experience in a sense, right? But at the same time, a lot of people seem to be still enjoying it. That to me shows that they
yeah, it's educational, it's fun, and it has good drops.
I was gonna say the drops are another good thing. I mean, I wouldn't even consider it. I guess it would be mid level, but it's higher mid level. You know, it's not like, you know, a level 50 weapon where it's already just kind of consumed around it by things you're already going to use. Like the weapons, from what I understand, are, you know, better than your Dragon Scimitar, even your whip in some cases, Barrows. It's really kind of just slightly above that to where it makes it worth it to run, because you could have something that's fun and engaging, but it's like at the end of the day, you're either not making money, you're not getting drops that are worth it. I think it balances out really well with a stepping stone and filling that sort of high or mid to high level gap before you're getting your scythes, you're getting your rapiers, you're getting all this big end game stuff.
Yeah. So. I mean, I think they targeted sort of Barrows level, and I think they
that's a fair assessment.
Right?
Yeah.
And Barrows, that is pretty old content, but it's still relevant. And I think this will, stand the test of time as well, from what I've seen. Like, this really fits in a beautiful spot next to Barrows.
Yep.
Good. Well, Varlamor is not all blood sports and moons.
We also kill cute creatures, not just evil creatures, but also cute.
And of course you're referring to the Hunter Guild on this, and I have to be 100% honest, I hate Hunter as a skill, but I think that's due to a lot of the problems with the skill itself. So the biggest thing that comes in from this is the new rumor mechanic, and it didn't set me off on the right foot. My first rumor took 90 minutes to do, hunting Barb Kevin.
Now, was that largely because it was overcrowded, or just the mechanic itself wasn't firing properly?
Oh, I was the only one there, and so it was just taking its sweet time to appear.
That's fair. Okay.
When did you do this?
In the evening North American time on the day of launch.
Oh, yeah. They did improve the drop rates, I think, after that.
Okay. Because my first day was, check out the farm patch, check out the thieving, and then on to Hunter after that. So
I did three rumors a couple hours ago, and I don't think I was really at a location for more than 10 minutes. I had a Larupia one, and I think I got it after, 20 captures, and then I had a Dark Kebbit one, which was Falconry, and I got that within like 50 captures, so nothing too crazy. I mean, that was the novice and the adept. I forget what the other one I did was, but
One of us certainly got spooned with their rumors, right, Sirion?
Yeah, I had four falconry ones, and most of them I had within like 3 minutes.
Oh wow!
Yeah, I had one dashing cabot one that took a little bit longer, but most of them were pretty like I couldn't even fill my inventory with skin like the drops before I got the thing usually. So got pretty lucky. I had a chin chomper one, which I got within like 5 or 10 captures. The only one that took me a little bit longer, like half an hour to 45 minutes, I think, is a sunlight antelope one.
Okay. I've heard
those still crowded?
It's not too bad. Like, at most, there were like 3 people there, and at that point, you're definitely competing, but if there's 2 of you, it's sort of fine. It's not the worst competition.
Yeah. And of course, the reason you do these rumors is to get things like the Quetzal whistle.
Yeah, I got a whistle blueprint on my third kill, on my third rumor. I feel a little bit. Yeah. I mean, I don't think they're going for too high of a price on the G, but I got pretty lucky on that.
You also get meats, which I was looking at this coming in, and I was under the impression, okay, are these rumors going to be for the idea of, training Hunter like you would train Slayer? And, the XP drop that you get from completing a rumor is not huge, so you have to really view
like
it as a
5K.
Yeah, you have to view it as an exercise of I'm going to get the Hunter XP from hunting the creature, and then a little bit on the rumor. But the bulk of it comes from the meats, which I feel is an interesting path that they took, because you can actually cook these meats and unlock the ability to cook them after you complete a certain number of rumors on that. And lo and behold, these meats are changing the way food works in terms of, providing different eating methods. And I think they're probably going to be pretty good for Slayer too, because some of them are heals over time, some of them heals run energy, some cure poison, though it's only the ultimate high level one that cures poison, but they're all very interesting nonetheless. on that.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, right? Like, if you look at it, like, there's a few, like, outliers, but largely all the food that people use right now come from fishing, and I think it's great that we're going to see a secondary source of food coming into the game. It's going to be interesting to see how that evolves. But yeah, on Hunter in general, no, I don't like Hunter much either. I've been doing birdhouses all the way.
Yeah. And I think the guild, and in particular the rumors, exemplify the issues with the Hunter skill, which they're aware
of. Yeah, they don't solve it so much, right?
No.
Like, they just, I think they're, like, a lot of people were complaining about the rumors, and, you know, overcrowding is going to be a factor, and there being, like, you know, things like deadfall traps being a little bit, you know, jank. I think it's the right
word. That's your favorite word for, like, three episodes in a row.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that it the only thing that the Hunter Guild does is it forces you to engage with that content again. And I think most people have sort of avoided engaging with Hunter altogether by doing birdhouses. I think they just need to update Hunter, and it looks from the feedback update that they want to address Hunter. It's just a separate project. So I think the rumors themselves, they are well done. Well executed. They're not game changing. But, you know, I like them.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's a good point about the food. I think it's overlooked. You know, most food is fishing, right? Or cooking. And who's going to sit there and make meat pies to go on a Slayer task, right? So, I mean, it really is just fishing. So, you know, having something, another way to get meat for people that don't necessarily want to sit there and AFK, I think that's good. It brings a little bit more variety. And again, it's kind of that heal over time. It's because at any given point, you have kind of the healing table is filled out with fish, and it's usually all instant, or it kind of angler fish obviously boosts more. But this is a way of being able to add more food items with different mechanics and still put it sort of in the tier list, so to speak. So you have shark and then, you know, Larupia. Like, it's not the same thing. One gives a little bit more, but you kind of have to wait a little bit for it. So I think that works really well.
Yeah, and also I want to draw attention to the difference in levels, because a cooked Pyrefox heals 19, initial 11, and then 8 over time, whereas the shark heals 20. The shark is 80 cooking. The Pyrefox is only 59. So that's also a nice thing to look into as well for that. And, you know,
I guess for Iron Man as well, right? Like, it gives them like another output to the Hunter, because right now Hunter doesn't really have an output where it goes into anywhere. And this way,
you get some early levels, and, you know, get obviously something that's comparable to Shark. And, you know, early game Iron Men aren't hopping into raid content. They're slaying, and this is perfect Slayer food. Yeah. And they don't have to get 80 fishing. They don't have to spend 2 weeks AFKing to, you know, get their fishing up so they can train combat, right? So, yeah, I think this is very valuable for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, as sometimes it goes, you open up a new area and you invite new people in, crime increases.
Baltimore opens border, crime increase. That was one of the funniest memes I've seen around this entire launch.
Arcade, did you see that one?
I did. Oh, boy. It was pretty good.
I love this thieving training method. I love the fact that it starts with the wealthy citizens in the bazaar, and then after that the child or the street urchin distracts them, and then you get the lean back thieving like we had in Leagues. That's where you steal the keys, and then you go and you break into one of three houses. It's more lean back, and then you get a little blinking notification for a bigger XP drop.
Yeah,
this is what I needed for thieving, because I was, you remember last week or the week before on the show, I was in the midst of testing out plugins for the Sorceress's Garden, for the Piscarilius artifacts to get thieving up. I needed this.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's a new thieving method, and specifically with thieving, there's usually
not much depth to it. It's like, here's another object you can steal from. Here's another person you can pickpocket, right? There's not, it's usually not multi-level, other than, pun intended, the agility pyramid and pyramid plunder. This has a little bit more depth to it. Like you're pickpocketing something for, or pickpocketing someone for keys, and then you use those keys to get the lean back method. So it's kind of a multi-tiered, a little bit more engaging, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Not really much lore, but it makes sense. It's organic. Again, it's not like, here's a safe, go crack this, you know, here's another paladin, you know, knight, and go get him. This is multi-layered, and it works really well within the meta, I think. So
yeah, and I know Sirion, you had big thoughts on this.
Yeah, no, like I really like the problem you have with thieving, right? Like if you look at the way that RS3 went, and sorry, there we go again with the comparisons.
I think it's okay to mention it when old school is doing it better.
Because when they introduced Thrift Dinners, right, and you basically got automatic pickpocketing, that completely changed thieving, right? Like that was what was expected at that point, and it kind of trivializes the skill in a sense. And I think here they struck the right balance, right? Because continuously spam clicking on, you know, that's a league's relic. You get that, that's overpowered in a sense. But here they give you that option of continuously pickpocketing to the distraction by the urchin. So that was the first thing. I was like, that's great, right? Like it's not continuous, but if you pay attention, you can sort of have moments where you're not continuously clicking your mouse. So it brings like an interesting sort of pattern to it. And then when you go into the houses and you can sort of click, but there's like, you need to follow the arrow for more XP drops. You need to watch for the owner coming back, jumping out of the window. Like to me, it doesn't undermine the fundamental idea of thieving that it is an active skill.
No.
Right?
No.
It's a little bit more laid back, but it keeps the core like fundamental aspect alive, and it doesn't completely make it so that normal pickpocketing becomes like gross. Who would ever want to do that? Because, well, actually, you need to get access to this laid back method.
I mean, you could just extract it out, because 45 is when the fruit stalls stop being the best. So you got 45 to 50 that you know would really, you know, need to find something for, but beyond that.
But you need to do the pickpocketing to get the keys.
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. Got it.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, I like this. I feel it is just an extension of what thieving is, and I think Arcane explained it perfectly. It's actually multi-layered and multifaceted, right? You know, all the jewelry you steal is definitely multifaceted, but...
Oh boy. And I think
I think it's good.
Yeah, and that encompasses everything that we've talked about, right? Because at the surface it looks like, oh, it's just a few new hunter creatures and hunter slayer. Oh, it's just another, you know, mid-tier PVM encounter, but no, it's a way to, you know, teach PVM basics. Oh, it's just, you know, another wave-based game in old school, but it's, you know, in effect, the next challenge for people who are maxed out. So there's quite literally, I think, something for everybody, and it's all very multifaceted with that from the top to the bottom on this. And I think that's, you know, partially what makes what we have here a success, because I wasn't jumping up and down to get into Varlamar this week. I wasn't. Sirion knows that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, after playing through the content multiple pieces of it, I've you know, warmed up to it all practically. Well, except for the Coliseum, because I can't do it, but you know.
I think that's a very fair kind of a viewpoint that I can get behind as well. Again, it was big. I wasn't losing sleep over it, like, oh my gosh. Wasn't just chomping at the bit to get to it. I really didn't get stuck in until like the day after release. Obviously, I was watching some streams and some videos, but I was not, you know, the first one to get on the island and start going around. But once I did, I really did. I got stuck in, and I definitely think this is, I would call this kind of like an iceberg update. You know, there's this little, a bunch of surface level. It's a bunch of just mid-level content to where you just be like, I'll get there when I get there. But each thing is so much more and it's deeper and it really just ties in well. And there's so much more than just kind of what's advertised, which is kind of why I think of it as more of like an iceberg update in the best possible way. That sounds bad on the surface, but there's a lot more.
I completely get where you're coming from.
Like you can have these beautiful, glamorous updates, right, that everybody's super excited about, and then after a few weeks, everybody has sort of forgotten about. And I think Varlamor is going to be very similar to Corrant and Zaya in general, that I think the continent has a lot to offer. And I think people are going to keep going back to it, and I think, you know, doing an upcoming leagues, for example, when people go to this, like, it will be a go-to destination and people will learn all the different things you can do here. Like, we haven't even touched on everything this week, right? We haven't even touched on the quest. We haven't even touched on, like, mining and prayer and agility. But I think we'll be doing that next week.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I already have comments on the mining and the prayer because again, just like the thieving, that's something that I didn't know that I needed in my old school RuneScape experience. But lo and behold, it's here. And, you know, this is the kind of updates that we live to cover. And this is why we do the podcast. Arcane, do you have anything you want to add? Anything you want to throw in? Final thoughts? Anything really before we start wrapping this one up?
I just want to say that I think there's definitely some importance for mid-level updates, right? And I think this was very well done. And like we said before with the Colosseum, it's, you know, give something to the higher level community to get them engaged. Because if they're coming to do the Colosseum, while they're here, like, yeah, I want to check out Moons too, right? I want to do some Hunter contracts. That looks fun. I want to get the whistle. You know, you get everybody engaged on at least some level and you bring them in. I obviously started in 2004, maxed in 2015, and kind of never really had the opportunity to experience mid-level updates. Usually a lot of the updates in, you know, RS2 were usually in-game, kind of pushing the envelope. You know, you had Barrows, and then you had, you know, God Wars came out. It was always the next thing kind of in the natural progression. It was never... at least I was never in the position to where, you know, a level 50 thieving method came out that I could use and it was worth my time. So I've never had too much experience in RS2 or RS3 to where a mid-level piece of content really benefited me to do it. I mean, Menaphos is a great example. It was very mid-level content, and really kind of the only reason I got stuck into it was because, you know, 120 Slayer, I had to do it for the cape. Like, it was a requirement for me to go and do a lot of the kind of busy work around the city and the training methods. They were kind of a moot point for me. You know, I wasn't in the VIP area cutting logs because, you know, that wasn't something that was sort of best in slot for me to do at the time.
Whereas this is the opposite side of the coin.
Correct, where I am in the mid-level content and we're getting very, very much so quality mid-level content updates and I can experience them. They are basically what I need to do at this current point in time. I am directly benefiting from the rewards, from the experience, from just the change of scenery, if anything, right? And I think that's very, very valuable and something that, again, a lot of people have had that experience since they started over in old school. Or just people making Iron Man and just having multiple accounts. Whereas this, you know, I'm not one to have 19 different accounts and just constantly just trudging through the game, right? So I think this is very valuable and just kind of an eye-opener for me of how important, even if I'm high level in RS3 and once I'm high level in old school, that even if I'm not getting super stuck into an update that's mid-level, it's definitely important for the people that that need that. So.
Yeah, and, you know, Sirion and I definitely feel that because that's, you know, decidedly where we are too in this one. So I think.
So where might we see you next in game, Arcane? What are your goals over the next few weeks and months?
As of right now, I've been pretty busy at work. I'm work from home, so I've been doing a lot of Zaya runecrafting kind of AFK. So I'll probably be doing some of that, but. Kind of short-term goals are getting I want to get easy and medium combat achievements finished and then get to 100 combat and then start farming out my Elite Void just so I don't have as many switches and to where it's still relevant in the mid game, to where I can, you know, do Slayer without this crazy inventory and just do some lower level bosses with, you know, a little bit less gear, but, you know, hybrid. Long term, and this, you guys are going to laugh, I've been tossing around the idea of an Ultimate Iron Man. Just out of curiosity, see what I can do. Clearly, I'm a bit of a crazy person if I'm going for untrimmed runecrafting, right? So always kind of pushing the boundary of, like, what do most people consider insane and wouldn't do that, you know, maybe I can dip my toes into. So not really on the future, near future radar, but it's something I've kind of been tossing around, and I may play around with it, you know, if anything, just kind of make one and play it on the side, but not get super stuck into it. But that's kind of my short-term roadmap. So
nice. Well, maybe we'll hear from you on that.
Yeah, I couldn't go as far as going Ultimate Iron Man, so I stuck with Hardcore Iron Man on my secondary account, but I felt the same. Like, it's just a thing to do as a secondary thing to decide. And, you know, for me, leagues was sort of the reason for, hey, I actually like sort of the puzzle that comes with figuring out where to get items from, right? Rather than just putting in a GFO. So I can see the appeal of an Ultimate Iron Man in that as well.
It forces you to play pieces of content, even if you don't like them, right? So yeah. I've always been like, oh gosh, it just sounds like such a chore. But I mean, again, like you said, with leagues, like, I had to get everything. Granted, everything was at a 16 times rate and I could bank wherever I was and teleport anywhere around the map. But it's like, I had to go chop oak logs if I wanted to get my fletching to, you know, 30 so I could do that. So it's definitely valuable in the fact that you experience almost every part of the game, if not forced.
It felt rewarding for me as well, right? Yeah. It felt like it was truly my own achievement.
Correct. So. Yep.
And that just showcases a huge amount of depth to the game, too. I know the Iron Man style is not for me, and that was my league's experience on that, but I'm glad that the both of you have been able to, you know, take that from leagues and subsequent Iron Man adventures to learn from that and, you know, find an additional thing to do in game. So I'm very happy about that, nonetheless. Yeah. So. Alrighty, folks. Well, that pretty much brings us to the end of this episode. Sirion and I will be back next week, as we mentioned, with the quest lore, mining prayer, and whatever else we've been up to in RuneScape. In the meantime, if you want to subscribe to the podcast, update.show/OS or youtube.com/@OSRSupdate. Do subscribe there. Leave a like. Greatly helps the channel out. But I don't believe there's anything else. So again, Arcane, thanks for being on the show this week with us. It's great having
you. Thanks for having me. It's a good time.
And we'll see you guys next week for another episode of the Old School RuneScape Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
Bye.
See ya.